Welcome to the Kingdom ROI Return on Intention Show. I'm your host, Eric L. Dunovit, the Kingdom ROI Strategist. Families and businesses hire me to create, grow, and protect generational wealth by discovering that what they do in their family's living room matters more than what they do in their boardroom or advisor's conference room. On this show, I'm here to tell the stories of families and business owners who recognize that they didn't have a growth problem, they had a relationship and priority problem. We'll hear stories and the journey these families who recognize that business and financial growth weren't what mattered. They know that their relationships and priorities is what's going to determine their outcomes. So stick around to hear the hardships they've faced, the lessons they've learned, and the wisdom they wish they would have known along the way. Each story captures the blessings and the struggles of pursuing return on intention instead of return on investment. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the next 40 minutes where we take the world's broken mindsets and systems and turn them upside down. Everyone, welcome to the Return on Intention Show. It is a great day, and I have brought another special set of guests, because what you know is that my passion is to advocate for families to grow and protect generational abundance for 100+ years by exposing the widespread planning illusions and minimizing the destruction of wealth that happens during your lifetime and beyond. And our guests today have lived a life with an understanding that to truly achieve abundance, it's not about the next business or financial strategy. It's about acknowledging that what we do in our living rooms matters more than what we do in any conference or boardroom. So I'm excited about diving more into the story of their journey. So Sherry and Danny Silk, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Hey, so for my audience who doesn't know you, introduce yourselves. Tell the audience a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Oh, wow. That's a long answer. I'll just say what we're currently doing is we're leading Loving on Purpose, which is an organization focusing on relationships. We believe that whole healthy families are going to save the world. And have a podcast, The Kylo Show. We have the Kylo. Kylo stands for Keep Your Love On, which was one of the books that I've written. We have Kylo University that we're running, which is helping families, people, anybody actually, strengthen their connection with God, with their own heart, and with others. And so we're leading into that. We've been in ministry for 30 years in various ways, and authored books. And
yes, I work, help with Loving on Purpose, but I also work for a local church heading up their movement. So anything that's pointed outward, I oversee those directors, like music labels and online schools and podcasts and stuff like that. So
And that church's name is
Jesus Culture. Yeah, is the name of the church. I love it. Danny says I eat problems for breakfast. So
I love that.
I love to unpack things and point out ways we could do stuff better. We've been married almost 40 years, and so we've worked out a lot of problems here as well.
Right. She's just about done with me. Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask both of you, like, if you look at this season of life that God has you in, what's the superpower? And it sounds like, Sherry, yours is eating problems for breakfast.
Well, I think one of the superpowers we have is laughter, actually. Mm. We, even in some of our roughest years, Danny's ability to make me laugh has gotten us through some really tough times, or not just between us, but just situations we might be in that are just really hard. And Danny's humor has always been so appreciated. And that's a superpower, I think.
Yeah, probably the main thing is our focus on connection. I mean, we actually believe and practice that connection is the most important thing. Disconnection is the biggest problem in the world. The planet stops. Mm-hmm. when there's a disconnect. I often refer to a disconnect as the couch is on fire. Like, what would be a bigger problem right now that you would need to tend to than the couch being on fire? That is a disconnect in a marriage, with your kids, with you and the Lord. Where you know, if there's a disconnect, that's where the anxiety, the enemy goes to work in that disconnect. So love casts out fear very much is the offensive weapon, I think, that helps all of us to last that 100 years, you know, build those legacies, continue the momentum generation to generation.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you this question. And was there a moment that this passion or an experience that this passion for Keep Your Love On in the movement you're in right now was really ignited? Is there a kind of a place where that happened, that it's like, this is where we've got to go now? And if it, could you tell us kind of the specifics of that?
I don't know that it was a moment.
Years of counseling.
Yeah. I don't know if it was a moment or just the, maybe the fruit of momentum of realizing some things that, when we entered a covenant, we actually had no idea what that was going to require. And as a result of hanging on to that covenant, it has taught us to be different human beings than we were when we started. Our story is that Sherry's two parents and her stepfather, my two parents, those five people represent 15 marriages. They've all been married three times. And when we got married, there was the Taylor Johnson compatibility assessment that we did. And we didn't find out the results until 12 years after we got married. Our pastor sat down with us and said that the psychologist had written a note that said, do whatever you can to stop this marriage because we are clinically incompatible. So the baseline of our starting point was subterranean, and we've really had to become different people in order to understand the practice of covenant and breaking a generational curse that is one generation behind us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what makes us so passionate to help other people, because we know how hard it is. We worked really hard. It was really rough for 10, 12, 15 of our 40, you know, we just were just pounding it out, but we never, like, I grew up with my parents. My stepdad was my stepdad since I was six, but I grew up with my parents yelling, let's get a divorce every single night. And it was just, my normal was, you know, survival. And Terry, I have six brothers as well. So that, you know, it was just a crazy household. And so that was always an option. It you know, it's one of the options is divorce. And, but we, of course, we were believers and our parents weren't necessarily practicing their faith. And so we just had to choose, just keep choosing each other in the midst of pain and conflict. And so we know how hard it gets, but we have great faith for what the end result can be if you both commit to do something different than what's been done before you.
Who was it, or who had the greatest influence on both of you, knowing that your parents weren't believers, to keep that covenant and keep recommitting?
We got saved into Bill and Benny Johnson's ministry that are currently Bill is currently the leader at Bethel Church. We've been a part of that community for 40 years. And it's really the community of leaders there that have influenced us the most. They are some of our closest friends, longest for sure, our longest journeying friends. We look around that group and we got hope. We also got an example of what you hope is true somewhere. Like, I remember getting saved and coming into this church and meeting these couples that had several children. And I'd say, are these all your children? Or are they some just, you're the only parents these children have ever had? Really? I mean, you have teenagers. You're the only parents these kids have ever had. Well, you know, it was like you going to the zoo in Australia. You were just like seeing things you've just never knew existed. And that became our community and our normal.
Yeah. Mm. For sure. I remember sitting at 21 years old, sitting in someone's living room and watching the adults interact with each other. And I just had never seen anything like it. My heart was, I didn't even know. It was just so normal. The other way for me was so normal. I didn't even know what I was looking at. I was like, is this even possible? Are these guys just faking it in front of people? Wow. And behind closed doors, they are just lit up, you know? And so we got saved at around the same time as each other. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the believers were more of established marriages and stuff. So we walked into an environment of, it just looked like these people were from the moon. You know, this isn't possible.
Right.
And we both come from different backgrounds in that I was raised in a family where my parents were business owners. Mm-hmm. They were entrepreneurs. We always had new cars, new houses. We had, you know, my dad was the head of every men's club in town and my mom was the head of every women's club. And they're very active in the community, very well-known people. And at home, it was a real mess and nobody mm-hmm. knew. Nobody knew that about our home. And I think part of the problem that played into it was my parents, we weren't in the system. We didn't have the family broken down enough that we were in the system. So no one knew there was abuse going on in the home and physical and all kinds of other crazy stuff. And so when I was in high school, I'm the youngest. So I was the last one home and I was just had, I'm the only girl. I got in a fight with my stepdad and ran away and got picked up by the sheriff's department and put in a foster home for the weekend at 17 years old. And by Monday, they had me in juvenile court with the judge and he interviewed me in his office, you know, told me, and I just had it with my stepdad. And my mom, I never got mad at so much because I felt like she was a victim as well. Although as you get older, you realize, oh, she helped play into all of that as well. But so I listed all the things that my dad ever broke or threw or punched or hit or slapped or I just laid it. I didn't know, but he was writing it all down. And so they brought my parents in and he read the list as my parents sat in silence. And I thought this is going to be a transformational moment for my stepdad. He's going to get it finally. He's going to hear how much pain he's caused. And he sat there in silence. And when we got in the car, he said, I can't believe who that judge thinks he is. I helped put him in office and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, he did not hear a word that was just said. And so
nothing much changed.
Nothing changed. And so without a life transformation, you know, like really repentance and sorrow, that's when things change. And so I knew that. So when I walked into homes that were just functioning normal, I'm like, they live with that transformed life that I didn't know I needed, but it was on display in their homes and so thankful for it. And all of those friends are, you know, Benny's passed away, but they're all together and been married 45, 50 years, you know, beautiful examples. And I think that really helps. And the thought of going to get help from people that, you know, we both could have found people to talk to that would agree with our pain and say, yeah, you should get a divorce, you know. But we never went to those people for advice. We kept going to the people we knew would tell us the truth and kind of kick us back in the game.
As you've been on this journey of not only holding on to the covenant of your marriage, but also watching God weave in and out this ministry opportunity now of Keep Your Love On, tell me a couple places that you made mistakes, but they were opportunities that God turned into blessing and really then birthed more of what's in the ministry.
It was pretty consistent for a lot of years, actually. There's lots of mistakes. I would see that
give me one specific or one story if you could.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one. I think probably the big aha or the big turnaround in my life was when Sherry came home from some counseling, inner healing type work, and I'm thinking, I'm so happy. And I can't believe, that all the work that needs to be done in there and, all that family of hers, she's raised by the wolves. I was raised by Casper the ghost. I have a single mom and, I raised myself, but she was raised by the wolves. And she came home and she said, I said, how'd it go? She goes, well, it was amazing. I said, oh, whew, okay, good. What happened? She said, well, I really realized that I've never felt protected. And I thought, aha, okay. And she said, by you. And I was thinking, what, how did I get involved in your inner healing journey? And that was an aha for me that I really was so passive and self-preserved in the role of husband that I had only thought about protecting myself and everybody else from her anger and her armor to protect herself. Mm-hmm. And so it was a moment for me to repent of my contribution to the major anxiety that we had between us and the constant disconnect. And I felt like the Lord really broke through in that moment, changed my heart. And all of a sudden I began to move towards her instead of away from her whenever she was scared or hurt or feeling powerless. And she expressed it with anger, but it was really that she was scared, she was hurt, or she was feeling powerless.
Chair, I don't want to miss an opportunity for you to tell a story, but that is so powerful because this comes back to a kingdom principle, right? Which is this idea that when we feel hurt in everything we do, we want to pull back versus what God calls us from a relationship standpoint is to pour in Keep Your Love On in the work that you've been doing with families and couples and things like that. Where do you find that the biggest breakthrough happens in that? What is the greatest gift that you can help people see that helps them move in versus that natural reaction of wanting to pull away?
We talk a lot about people being powerful. And some people think that being a powerful person is being an aggressive person, being a dominant person, being an angry person. And being a powerful person is really self-control. Can you tell yourself what to do and you will do it? Now, to the degree that that's true, then you can go to the next step, which is that you will choose connection over distance. Because classically, when people are involved in a disconnected relationship, they change their goal to distance, which means that there's just nothing to connect to. And so when you have the goal of distance with me, you set me up to do everything wrong. I can't do anything right in your mind because your goal is to keep me away. So until I take responsibility for my choice of either connection or distance, there'll be no repair to the relationship if it's distance. So all my marriage counseling would start with, what's the goal of your relationship? And until they tell me my goal, and both of them say, my goal is connection, we're disconnected and we don't know what to do. Until we get to that point, I really have no help for them. And I will say, this is our last meeting if your goal is distance. You don't need my help. You're doing a great job without me. So I think the most powerful thing that we do is teach people that they are on a good day in control of themselves, and they are never in control of other people. So if you can't get yourself to do it, this isn't going to happen.
Jerry, what about you? And what mistakes or greatest lessons along the way of growing this has God shown you?
Yeah. Well, I think Danny mentioned my anger. I because of my living with the wolves, I don't have a passive personality, so I didn't shrink back. I just came out swinging, so to speak. Yeah. And verbally, I was, you know, we just, you know, horrible with my being able to shred you with my thoughts, you know? So, I mean, to plainly say it, I feel like I had to learn to shut up and Danny had to learn to show up. My anger was, it probably helped me survive as a child, but I didn't realize I didn't need it anymore. And so I'm marrying this wonderful guy. He's got his issues, but he's not an aggressive person. And we would get into an argument and I would just go DEFCON 5 and he would be way down here. Just like, you know, it's just the toilet seat, honey, you know, whatever. I just didn't know how to control that. So over the years, like Danny mentioned, I had to learn that my stuff is my problem to work on. Mm. It's not up to him. He can't change the way he talks to me or say it just perfect to make it all go right. That's not up to him at all. I'm powerful. So I started going to a codependency group when I kind of figured out another thing I didn't mention is that if you have abuse in your home and it was just normal to me, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything else. And so I started learning. He started going to school to be a social worker. We started learning, you know, behaviors and things that you learn in those kind of situations. So I was learning all that as I went, as we had children, as we were doing music. It was just wild, but I was learning, oh, wow, I'm acting like an abused person. I'm protecting myself with all these, you know, behaviors. So once I started looking at it, then I can start changing it. And that's why I tell people all the time, you have to own your story. You have to say, these things happened to me. I'm not a victim, but I was victimized. And if I stay in victim mode, I'm not going to change ever. So I have to own my story, pull like mold grows in the dark, pull it out, look at it, figure out what you can do with it, you know, and then embrace your journey, which is you're in charge of what you do from now. What classes can you take? What book can you read? What podcast can you listen to? How do I grow the things that aren't strong in my life? And I get to change the end of my story. I'm that powerful. I can go from a completely victimized young person to a very powerful person that's in charge of, with the Lord, my whole end of my story. You know, this last year and a half, I got diagnosed with breast cancer in 2021. And so that's another thing. Like, I don't have any control over that, but I do have control about my attitude and how I feel about it, how I address it. How do I become a victim and be depressed and just slunk away? Or do I fight and do I take control of my mind, which fear is a big deal. So I just think I learned how to become a powerful person. So I don't know if I made tons of mistakes, I would say, with my anger. You asked specifically. Yeah. About that. I was just mean. I was just mean. So of course he didn't want to come close to me. So I was a porcupine, you know? Right. And then the more he retreated, the angrier I got, you know, that's simple, right?
Maybe one or two lessons. So I love the beauty of God pulling the two of you together. But the other thing that I know is true is that children many times teach us as many lessons as we're trying to teach them. as you guys have been growing this and knowing the families that you came back from, maybe if you could give us a couple of just examples of things that your kids taught you about the importance of relationship as you were raising them.
That's a great question.
Well, obviously the biggest lesson that you learn as a parent is what unconditional love is. You know, like, oh my gosh, you know, like, how did this person get so deep in my heart and all they do is poop on me? I don't understand what's happening here, you know? So I think that the reality of that bond that you have with a child, you know, you realize you can point this at each other, at anyone, if you choose to, but you really learn how deep the capacity of your love is with these super demanding relationships. And I think that, you know, the more you invest and the more that you sacrifice and the more that you are humbled in situation after situation, the grace that comes on your life to be Christ-like is, I don't know how else you would learn it if you didn't have children. You know, I don't know how you would even learn how much God loves you if you don't have children, because the experience, the bond of that reality is a reflection of Christ's love for me.
Amen.
Yeah. I think they teach us that control is an illusion. you know, when kids are little, you can pick them up and move them and whatever. You can't do that with your teenager, and you can't do that. We have adult children, of course, now. But, I think we apply the need for connection to our kids as well, because as they grow older, the only thing that's going to work to really change, to be able to point something at their heart and for them to grab a hold of it, is connection. Like, if I chew that up as I'm parenting them, if I just make that so fragile, the bridge that between us is so fragile that nobody can jump up and down on it. It's just a tightrope walk at that point. So just building that bridge of connection through, I mean, disagreement and, you know, today's world and adults and all the different things that are out there, the only thing we have is our connection. That's it. And that's what brings them home. That's what makes them call when they want something or need something or have need for mom and dad's advice or whatever. And I used to say my master plan was to get my kids to fall madly in love with me, so that we just have that bond, you know, and so not chewing. And my anger in the early years really did chew up that connection. But the parents they had in their teens was a different parent than they had when they were young and we were younger. And I think I like to encourage parents all the time, you know, your personal growth and your parenting are growing at the same time. So you're giving your kid the best version of yourself as you go. No one's trying to mess up their kids. So grow yourself, change your trajectory, and your parenting will change as well.
Yeah. I think so many times we're so hard on ourselves on where we've been.
Yeah.
Right. Versus the importance of the relationship and the connection. As you look at the opportunities that you've had to engage with families and engage with people through this idea of moving more into connection, what are one or two points that people maybe are the most where people face the most resistance, and what can you share in wisdom on maybe that helps with that breakthrough?
Well, I think that most people are taught that someone else controls them. You know, someone else controls their happiness. Someone else controls their anger. Someone else controls their hope. Someone else controls their love. You know, I love you because you love me. And if I don't feel loved by you, then I don't love you back. And it's, there's this craziness around trying to get someone else to give you something so you can be some way. And it turns you into a control freak because you need hope, you need love, you need joy, you need all these things. And if you don't take responsibility to manufacture them in you and go to the Father to get these supplies so that you can be a great supplier, then you are a starving person that is trying to manipulate the world around you to get what you need. And so I always say, if you're going to be a control freak, control your freaking self. Because that is the solution. You controlling yourself is on a good day, your best bet. And when you're trying to control the universe around you, there's so much anxiety because you spend so much time powerless. And so I think that the biggest resistance that I run into is the repentance around who controls me and who do I control. But once people begin to realize I control me and that's where it ends, then freedom opens up and people get to enjoy so much more of themselves and their relationships with other people.
Day, I'll add this only because I've been guilty of this myself. I'm thinking just back over the last year and in lessons that God has taught me is that the most dangerous times in my life are when I've been trying to almost like hold on white knuckle and control. And it was in the moments where God taught me that if you would just surrender, this gets a whole lot easier. But that becomes a kingdom idea, right? Surrender is so anti-cultural to what we just give up and let him do what. And that's the same thing relationally that you're saying, like give up and let God kind of change and mold you and understand you can't control anyone else but yourself. That's so powerful.
Yeah. I think for me, I would describe it as holding on to my end of the rope, relationally, you know, when kids grow and get out of the house, or even my parents, my mom actually passed away 22 years ago. My stepdad lived to be 93 and he was just a hard man. He never really changed much. But I just learned that I can't expect the kind of love from him that I'm capable of giving, because he doesn't have the king and the kingdom. He hasn't transformed his life. So I was pretty angry at him most of the time. That's kind of guarded me from, you know, he would be a constant source of pain in my life, even as an adult, you know, with his words or whatever. But I learned to reduce my expectations of him because he was incapable. It's almost like when we play with the grandkids, we get on the ground with their level. We don't stand up and throw them across the room because I'm stronger. I get on the ground and receive them at their level. And that's almost what I had to do relationally with my father. Is I'm not going to get that father need from you because you're not actually capable of giving it because of your life story and experiences and your inability to walk toward freedom. And so at the end of his life, the last time I saw him, he was at the end of his life and he was in a veterans hospital and went in there with my daughter and, having all my brothers not really stay connected to him except for maybe one. As soon as my mom died, they all just sort of stopped communicating with him because he was so hard. And so I just stayed connected with him throughout his life. And at the end, I walked in and I said, I got to go now, Dad. I love you. And he grabbed my hand and kissed my hand and said, I love you too, honey, and I will see you later. And I left there and he died 2 days later. And I thought that was only because I kept a hold of my end of the rope in the relationship. And it didn't mean he dropped his end all the time, but I just never let go of mine. And I think that applies in a lot of relationships with our bosses or our grown kids or our estranged friends or whatever, life happens and there's these rifts. But if you keep your love on and hold on to your end of the rope, you can still set boundaries and you can still, you know, there's no abuse allowed, that kind of thing. But
right,
it's just remarkable what God can do if you can hold on to your end of the rope.
That's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. That's so beautiful. That is so beautiful. Is there anything, we're running to the end of the show, is there anything you didn't get to share that you wanted to make sure you got to share while we were here?
I love you.
I love you too. I don't know. I think that probably the thing, one of the things we're most excited about is Kylo University, and that's it's just an opportunity for people to learn all this. Yeah. You know, it's 16 weeks.
Talk more about that. Talk more about how people can get connected to Keep Your Love On and everything. Yeah. Everything that you're doing.
Yeah. It's lovingonpurpose.com. Keep Your Love On is a book that I wrote, but lovingonpurpose.com will get you to learning about Kylo University. And, we very much are helping people see the Lord as a loving father, really, like he really is. I know we sing about it, I know all that, but you got to really understand what changed between the old covenant and the new covenant. What changed? Jesus changed our ability to see our father.
Yes.
You know, we lost that with the fall of man, with Adam. We lost the ability to see God the Father. Didn't get it back until Jesus. So that's a big deal. That really, you know, once people get that, then what begins to happen is they are no longer waking up in the courtroom as a criminal before a judge every day. They now wake up as a son or daughter in the living room with a father who I may be connected or disconnected from, but never on the verge of being punished. Never.
Yes.
And that, you know, that transition changes the way I live and experience life. So we're pretty excited about that. And the testimonies are just fantastic.
So it's how long is that? So people go to the website and go into the course, and how long does it last?
It's 16 weeks.
Okay.
Online.
It's an online school.
And is there fellowship or connection points, or is it just kind of self-driven? And what does that part look like?
No, it's live. It's live.
Teachers.
We call them transformation groups. You know, they have a leader in each of those groups. It's for real. It's phenomenal. It's so much fun.
Well, I bet. And this is so needed, right? In today's world, so needed from a connection standpoint. So we'll put the website in the show notes for anyone who wants to see that. I've got a couple minutes. My favorite question to always ask just before we finish up is, in 100 years, what do you hope that your great-great-great-grandchildren remember about you?
I think I love an overcomer story. I think I want to be known as someone that walked into adversity and overcame it.
Yeah, I hope our legacy is that we were faithful with the life that God gave us, and we carried it for the generation.
Yeah. Mm.
That they're eating the fruit of our faithful lives.
I love that. Yeah. Danny Sherry, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And I'm going to make another plug again. We'll put it in the show notes. But everyone here who listens to the show, you know, my passion about Kingdom ROI, return on intention, but understanding Kingdom also comes down to understanding, as Danny and Sherry were talking about, like who you are in the Kingdom. And so you need to go get involved in the 16-week course and really truly understand who you are as a son and daughter. And so I'm going to encourage all the listeners to go and get engaged. So again, thank you so much for joining us for today's show. For those of you out there, you know I run an invitation-only program that helps families grow and protect generational abundance for 100-plus years. And we do that by exposing widespread planning illusions and minimizing the destruction of wealth that happens during your lifetime and beyond. I've got several tips and examples that can help you grow your wealth by discovering you don't need another business or financial strategy. What you need is to acknowledge that what you do in your living room, what you do relationally, what you do in your connection, it all matters more than what you do in a conference or boardroom. So please connect with us on kingdomroi.org for more information. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you again next time. God bless you. Thank you so much for joining me for the Kingdom ROI Return on Intention podcast. If you're a business owner or a family who recognizes that what you're doing in your family's living room matters more than what you do in the boardroom or advisors' conference rooms, you're open to sharing the ups and downs of the journey and would like to be a guest on the show, then I'd like to invite you to apply by visiting our website, www.kingdomroi.org. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and they mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to our website, www.kingdomroi.org, or follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks for listening. This is Eric L. Dunavant, the Kingdom ROI Strategist, signing off. Until next time.